Welcome to In the Garden, hosted by UC Master Gardeners. And today we're on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My name is Mark Fearley, and the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the Board of Regents. For more information, go to KUCI.org. Today our show will focus on a unique part of our program, the Master Gardener program. It will be a little different than our normal program. Today we will be speaking with a special guest who is part of our hotline team. Her name is Linda Guinness. Welcome, Linda.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for inviting me here, and I look forward to informing the public about the service that we can give them.
Well, they will really be informed, and I recommend that they have a pencil and paper so they can take some notes, get our website correct, and all the information they need when they have questions. Before we get into our discussion, Linda, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How long have you been a Master Gardener?
I graduated from the Master Gardener program in 2012, so I guess it's my five-year anniversary being in the program.
How about that? What did you do before you became a Master Gardener?
I was in education for 37 years in the Santa Ana Unified School District. I was a teacher, a reading specialist, and also an administrator.
What a person. So you are accustomed to service. Service is a part of being a teacher, and it's a great service. And that's what we do at Master Gardeners. Isn't that correct?
Oh, it sure is. And it's like an extension of teaching, except I'm teaching more adults than little kids like I used to before.
I gotcha. What do you like better?
You know, I think I was just ready for a change. I still love children. I visited an elementary school a couple weeks ago and talked to some third graders about how native plants are adapted to the environment, but I also like teaching adults. And when I was a teacher, I was involved in a lot of teacher training, so I got used to teaching my peers.
And gardening in schools is a big thing nowadays.
Oh, yeah, it's a great way to get kids to eat their vegetables.
Isn't that the truth? I've always found that also.
A lot of our kids nowadays are really out of touch with where their food comes from, other than the grocery store.
Yeah, it comes from Vaughn's or Ralph's, right?
Yeah. So for them to be able to plant seeds and see little plants grow and then go out and actually pick a piece of broccoli off a plant, it's really a delight for them.
And parents are amazed when their children start looking for the vegetables that they grew to eat. What motivated you to become a Master Gardener?
Well, it probably started when I had a big tree in the front of my house that was starting to lift up the sidewalk in the driveway.
So oh, yes.
I had to have the tree taken out, and then I thought, you know, instead of the lawn was destroyed, and I thought I might as well put some low water use plants in here. So I started going to classes at different nurseries on Saturdays and learning more about plants and gardening. And when I retired from teaching, I signed up and I applied for the Master Gardener program and got in and been happy with it ever since. I got my 1,000-hour badge last year.
Congratulations. That is a big thing. 1,000 hours of volunteer time. And that doesn't count the time that it takes you to go back and forth from one site to another, plus all the research, etc., that you have to do to come up with the information that is important to our gardeners here in Orange County.
Oh, but it's been a lot of fun.
Isn't it? It really is. Adds a whole new part of our life, doesn't it? That's for sure. I know I've found that also. Now, today we're going to be talking about the hotline. What the heck is the hotline?
It's not quite like Butterball does when you have your turkey in the oven and you want to get an instant answer. So it does require a little bit of patience. I'm a co-lead, actually, with Karen Ward. I take care of all the statistics. I monitor the hotline, as Karen does. Karen's in charge of assigning people their days. And what happens is people can contact us through email or by phone.
Before we talk about that, why would they want to contact us?
We can help them out with their gardening. It's part of our mission as Master Gardeners is to give the home gardener access to information, university-based research information. So it's not what my Uncle Joe told me or, you know, someone
recommended. It's not handed down information.
No, it's something that, you know, some scientists, people who have a lot more training than we do, have already found out these things, and they found out what works and what doesn't work. And a lot of people would like to be more informed, and it could include anything going on in their garden, whether it's trees or growing vegetables or what they should plant or how much they should water their lawn, all those types of problems we could help them with.
Well, as I was mentioning earlier today, people know we're master gardeners. They start asking questions, and it's unbelievable how many people, even experienced gardeners, have issues that come up. And how do they get in touch with our hotline?
They can get in touch with us either by phone or by email. And we'll be giving that information out a little later in the show.
Why don't we give it right now, okay, and then we'll repeat it later. And
okay, email is really good because if you contact us through email, you can go into a lot more detail, and you can include photographs too, which is very helpful. So if you want to do email, it's hotline@mgorange.ucanr.edu. You could also go to our website, which is mgorange.ucanr.edu, and there's a little on the left-hand side of our homepage, you'll see gardening questions, and you can click on that link, and there's a form you could fill out, and you could contact us that way as well.
It's interesting. From that standpoint, I was talking to somebody just the other day, and they were at our home, and they saw my roses in bloom. They said, well, gee, I planted my roses. I've got some green, but no blooms. And so it's kind of interesting. I went over with her some of the things that she can do to do it. But a lot of people just have small questions. Mm-hmm. And do you like those kind of questions as well as the things where their leaves are turning black or whatever?
We welcome all kinds of questions. It can someone send us a picture of a plant they wanted to know if it was a weed or a flower, and it happened to be a snapdragon, which they had thousands of in front of Home Depot that day. But I mean, the person didn't know, and they were curious, and it could be something very simple, or it could be something that requires a lot of research and might be very complicated. We've had people send us pictures of insects that were hard to diagnose. Well, we found out that there was a new plant disease in Orange County that had previously been thought only to affect plants on the East Coast, and then we found out it was confirmed by the Agricultural Department that we actually had this plant tomato disease here in Orange County.
They've migrated east to west.
Oh, yeah, people travel and they bring things with them.
and most of our disease bugs come from back east, from what I understand.
We got a lot come in from Asia now, especially that we get so many products in from China that come on wooden pallets.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of bugs will hide in those wooden pallets. We get some south of the border. They come from all different places just because we have a global economy now. We get shipments of things from all over. People travel a lot and they inadvertently will bring pests. We get a new pest in California about every 40 days.
Is that right? And generally, is there anything we can do about them?
just to make sure we don't bring them in to begin with. Once they're here and they get established, then it's up to the researchers to see. If something comes from another place, sometimes its natural predators are not present in the environment here, so they will have to find other ways to deal with the pest that
and
comes in.
So they do the research.
Yeah, and that's what, as master gardeners, that's what we find out. We have, there's blogs we could subscribe to that actually the general public could. We have an invasive pest website we can go to and see what the latest insects are. So the people on the hotline generally sign up for these blogs and different information coming from the university. So we know about the latest pests. There's new ficus pests in Southern California now that weren't present a few years ago.
Well, and if they're coming from Asian countries or south of the border, oftentimes the scientists down there have done their research too.
Yes.
And our scientists then can do the research and find them. The Cooperative Extension, the ANR,
that's true.
Has a great deal of resources available, and as master gardeners, we do too. So you can rely on questions you have that are answered based on the information you have provided as a resident of Orange County. Provide as much information as possible. Provide pictures if possible. And you'll get a good answer. How long does it normally take?
The way the hotline works is we don't operate on the weekends. So if you send in a question on a Friday, Saturday or Sunday, it goes to the Monday team. And since we do get a lot of questions on Monday, we usually have two people on the Monday team. Divide up the questions between ourselves. And sometimes, depending on how quick they are, we can answer it the same the day after you submit it or within another day.
So it's a quick response.
It's a quick response. Our numbers over the years, we keep track of how fast we respond, and it's less than 2 days now. We're at like 1.3 is our average response time.
That is amazing. And is there a charge for this?
No, it's free. In fact, that's why we want, and we enjoy doing it. The people who have volunteered to be on the hotline are people who like to look things up and Google and research things and learn new things. So we're eager to answer your questions.
And they don't have to drive over to their nursery and hope they find somebody there that knows the answer.
No, they can do it from the comfort of their own home.
I like that. It's kind of like the advertisement for mortgages that we
in your
see
pajamas,
on television. Yeah, do it in your pajamas. Okay. Now, are there any questions you don't handle?
Yes, there's a few things. We stay out of any kind of legal disputes. We sometimes get questions with people who have a problem with their homeowners association, some kind of conflict with a neighbor. It could be roots coming under the ground or they want to trim an overhanging tree. But we stay out of any kind of legal disputes. We can't be an advocate for any certain political positions that people want to take. I know there's some groups coming up in Orange County now, non-toxic. We had non-toxic Irvine, and other cities are starting that. But we can't be asked to come and give a speech on their behalf. We can only provide the information that the university has approved. We can give them the facts about different things. We can make presentations to their group, but we wouldn't go to a city council meeting and advocate for a certain position.
And that's the way the master gardeners work.
Yes. As individuals, of course, we still have freedom of speech, but as representatives of the organization, we have to represent the organization, and so we stay away from
with research-based answers to questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That have already been addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Where do your questions come from?
They come from mostly Orange County, but other parts of Southern California. And we also have found, kind of accidentally, that there are 8 different Orange Counties in the United States. So we get questions from Indiana or New York, Texas and Florida sometimes, because they'll look up Orange County Master Gardeners and not notice that we're in California. So they send us their questions. They'll say, how will this snow affect my vegetable garden? And we'll go like, what snow? It's not snowing here. We do try when we get questions from other states to give them the information. Sometimes there are things that are common that we can help them with, but we also will give them a link to their local county. Master Gardeners is a national organization. There's Master Gardeners in almost every county all over, so we do have a list of all the links so we can hook them up with someone who's more familiar with their climate and can give them an answer really specific to their area. We've also gotten some from out of the country, from India. We had a question a few years back in South Africa because they grow some of the same plants that we grow. And, you know, if someone wants to ask us a question, we'll do our best to answer it.
Very interesting. And later on, we're going to maybe get into some of those type of frequently asked questions. But in the meantime, just to take a second or two, for our listeners, you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. It's a great radio station, and today we are not interviewing at the studio, but at the research center in Irvine. So, Linda, thank you for coming and putting on this informative program for our listeners.
Glad to be here, Mark.
Now, do we learn a lot of horticulture information from questions that come in from our listeners or from the people that hear about the hotline? Do we find out new issues that are coming up or issues that seem to prevail during certain times of the year, or maybe something new that comes along?
Yeah, I think that's one reason why a lot of people are very enthusiastic and like to be volunteers on the hotline. We have a team of about 13 people, and they're people who like to research.
Do you have those names? Maybe we can...
Sure. I have my co-lead is Karen Ward. I think I mentioned that. Then we have four people who will post the questions when they come in. They go to our... We have a software where all the email goes in and they transcribe calls that might come in. And that would be Karen again, Elizabeth Bancroft, Norma Yarborough, and Mary Steele, who is the founder of the hotline and set up our whole system. And then we have a team of people who answer questions, Mary Ellen Fulliman, Susan Mack, Stephen Liu, Coe Wilkins, Sherry Ciotta Rocco, Mary Zombeck, Don Grime, Linda Pluta, Elizabeth Bancroft, Norma Yarborough, Marie Connors, and Becky Touchette.
That is wonderful, because this is invaluable information, and it's researched again.
Yeah, we do learn a lot, too. A few years ago, we started having questions about little orange and black bugs that people were seeing in the Huntington Beach Community Gardens. And we found out, you know, we have to do a little digging, and we also have access to some experts around here, like Dr. Kawashima, who's an entomologist. And we found out they're Bagrata bugs. And they
I know, those little devils are something, aren't they?
Oh, they'll eat up your whole vegetable garden.
Yes.
But they were fairly new to the area, and they weren't commonly seen before. But we got that summer that they hit Huntington Beach, we started getting questions from other people. So once we had done that initial research and found out what the Bagrata bug was, and we had there was a pest note on it of what kind of measures you could take to control it, then when we had other questions come in, because obviously the bugs spread around, that we already had the information there to pass on to people about what they could do about it.
Well, it's interesting, because I had an issue with those areas, with those bugs over at Centennial Farm in Costa Mesa a few years ago.
Yeah, not too far from Huntington Beach.
And they just took over. It was unbelievable. And the head farmer, Jesus, at Centennial Farm, he didn't know what to do. He had to contact the master gardeners to find out. So that was interesting. Things pop up from time to time. Are you seeing any unusual things coming up at this year?
Well, last year we started having a lot of questions about Pittosporum silver sheen that were dying in different parts of Orange County, and that we found out that that particular plant is susceptible to root rot, and that's where we're having problems in some areas where it was being over-irrigated, and also that was it's been replaced now as getting to be a very popular landscape plant, and I think some landscapers now are making other choices because it doesn't seem to be doing as well as they had hoped here in Orange County. We get questions now. A few years ago when we started having problems with Huang Lung Bing, the citrus greening disease, that was in all over the news.
How does that exhibit itself? How do people recognize it?
It's called citrus greening. It will affect the color and size of the fruit. Sometimes the fruit comes out lopsided. It's not like round like you'd normally see an orange. You can see it's transmitted by a little bug called the...
You don't have to...
It's a psyllid.
There you go. That's
a
close
little, tiny little psyllid. One of those little bugs is so small you barely see it.
Tiny...
chews on the plant structure, you'll see the little things that look like rice sticks, little tiny white things coming out. We get a lot of questions, mostly it's false alarms that people think they might have Huang Lung Bing or citrus greening disease because, you know, it's very serious, it can kill the tree. But the cases so far that have been identified are all around where the original tree was found, and they suspect it came from some people who were exchanging cyan wood grafting under their trees, and someone brought a graft in from Asia and then gave grafts to their friends, and so that's where the disease originated. The little psyllids spread the disease, so you can have the bug but not have the disease because it would have had to munch on an infected tree to pass the disease onto your tree. So I think the agricultural commissioner is doing a really good job of trying to contain it. When we do get questions in, we have one come in just this weekend with a person who took a picture of the insect that looks like the citrus psyllid, and they wanted to ID it, and we're going to have them send that to the agricultural inspector. It's here in Orange County, and if they could tell if the bug is carrying the disease or not. The tree might not be diseased, so just having the insect itself is not a problem. It's if it's carrying the disease.
It's got to be carrying the disease.
Yeah. Just like a mosquito. Not every mosquito bite is going to give you West Nile virus, only from the mosquito that's carrying that disease.
And along that line, I understand citrus trees are questionable right now, that some nurseries aren't even selling citrus any longer. I don't know which ones, but I was reading in the Orange County Register about this, that there is a real issue now with the psyllid, the citrus psyllid.
Mm-hmm. When you buy a tree, you'll see that there's a little tag on the trunk of the tree that says you can't move it from the county.
Right.
Now that's been true for a few years. So that if you buy a tree, you know, at your local nursery, that tree is been inspected, that's free of disease, but you can't buy a tree in Orange County and then take it up to Fresno or something. When you buy the tree in Orange County, the tree has to stay in Orange County. It's moving things around sometimes that will move disease and pests, just like we have the shot hole borers now that are... sometimes they make their home in old wood, so you can't chop down a tree in San Bernardino County and bring the wood here to burn it. You're supposed to, you know, get the wood where you burn it, because carrying that dead wood around, you could be carrying insects too. So it's, you know, keeping people from transporting things around will help control the disease a lot.
How do you keep up with all this information?
I do subscribe to some of the blogs that come from UCANR. There's pest notes that come out. We could look up things in the Center for Invasive Pests. They're, you know, California-based things, so
you
know, they have different pests on the East Coast and Florida. They're dealing with things that we don't have. And we go continuing education, too. We have a lot of access to our lecturers that come in and keep us current with what's going on.
Particularly with new things and updating on old issues.
Yeah, because, you know, there's always new bugs around. We have, like, the shot hole borer now is really big. I was walking my dog in the park, and I noticed a tree with a lot of little dots. And I had, you know, been to the advanced IPM class and gone out with Dr. Kawashima and looked at trees. So I thought, those look like the shot hole borers. So I took a photo and sent some to Dr. Kawashima, and then I was walking a few days later, and we had a storm, and a branch had broken off the tree, and I could see the galleries that these insects had made inside the branches, just like a photo from an encyclopedia or something. So I took the photo, and Dr. Kawashima had someone come out and pick it up for his collection of things to use in his lecture. But then I talked to the city. They were in the process of taking down some of those trees and replacing them with a different species that wouldn't be susceptible.
So you are, as all master gardeners are, aware of what's going on in the area, because that's where we live, that's where our interests are. We may not know everything as a scientist, but we know where to go to get the answers. Is that how you look at it?
That's exactly right, because we're not scientists, so we don't have, you know, the degrees that other people have, but we know where to get the information.
We depend on the scientists.
We can connect the home gardener up with the scientist, and hopefully, like, we have pest notes there are pest notes out there on the internet that are written for commercial growers that will give you recommendations that the homeowner couldn't follow through with, because there's some pesticides you have to be licensed to apply. The pest notes that are aimed at the home gardener are written in more language we could all understand. I mean, it's still very scientific, but it'll give us steps that we can take as home gardeners, what we could do. And we always practice IPM. That's number one, and that means integrated pest management.
And can you explain that?
Integrated pest management means we always start off with the remedy that may have the least impact on the environment. First of all, we have to decide, identify what the problem is and decide if we could live with it. We don't live in a perfect world. We're not in little greenhouses with fans and sealed doors, so there's going to be bugs and pests and disease. And a lot of times, you know, nature will take care of itself. There's natural predators that will come and get the bugs. But when it becomes a problem, first of all, we would look to see if there's cultural controls, which means buying disease-resistant plants, keeping our plants pruned so the air could flow through, giving them proper food and water so they could stay healthy.
So, for example, on a tree, for air to come through, it has come through to be able to circulate within the tree, it's got to be good pruning practices.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So we also, people ask us where to get arborists, and you know, we're not, as master gardeners, we can't recommend any particular products or commercial ventures or people, but we can tell them where they can go to a website to get a licensed arborist.
I gotcha.
Okay, and then going on with the integrated pest management, then we have mechanical control, which means, you know, squish them, snip them, hose them off, do things that will just attack that bug that you want to get rid of without harming anything else in the environment. And then we go on to setting little traps, using organic pesticides if we need to. And then from there, last resort would be a chemical pesticide, but that's not the first thing we would advocate.
And it sounds as though IPM is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your garden clean. Be aware. Walk around every once in a while and look and see how your plants are doing. Generally, in today's Orange County, we used to have big lots and small houses. Now we've got big houses on small lots.
That's true.
And so it becomes a whole different issue with shade and the way trees are. If they get too big, how do we take care of them? With the drought the past 6-7 years, grass and...
We get a lot of questions on that. Recommendations for replacement of turf. Unfortunately, some homeowners associations still are restricting certain things. They will not let people plant warm season grasses, which of course, we can't get involved in, because we don't get involved in legal things, but we can make recommendations on what uses less water and what uses more water, what does well in Orange County and what doesn't do well here. Like if you
good
try
tips.
To get, you know, grass that grew well in your family home in New Jersey, it might not do so well out here in Orange
That's
County.
That's for sure. We have a whole different environment with, and I always recommend people when they buy a gardening book, most gardening books are published in the East.
Mm-hmm.
They have a whole different environment than we do here with a warm season, almost 12 months of the year we grow things. But back East, they've got snow and cold weather and different plants need cool seasons, and we don't get much of that. So things change as the environment changes.
That's true, and that's why it's good for people to contact their local master gardeners, because we're experiencing the same type of weather and situations that they have. Like some people might wonder if they have succulent plants, and they have a lot of little dings and marks, ugly marks on their succulents, and wonder if there's some kind of insect or disease. Oh, we had hail a month or so ago.
And if you lived in them, huh?
If you lived in a part of Orange County, you got hail, and it was, you know, kind of exciting and fun. A lot of people went out with their cameras and took a picture of the hail. And then a few days later, you'll see a lot of your fleshy succulent plants have little dots all over the leaves. And oh, my poor reed orchids, they look like they have the measles. They have little dots all over all the new growth is just fine, but that hail, you know, did a number on some of those plants. And see, some if you contacted someone in another part of the state, even they might not realize that we had hail here. That you know, that was an unusual occurrence.
Very good. Maybe you could give us a few, if you can think of it offhand, of some of the unusual questions that occasionally you get.
One we get, and this one kind of comes in batches because it's weather dependent. Is someone will send us a picture of this really disgusting looking mess that they found on usually on their compost or mulch, and they wonder what it is, and it's called dog vomit fungus. Now there's a scientific name too, but it's commonly called dog vomit fungus because that's what it looks like. And it's very common. It's not harmful to plants, so you can just ignore it. It'll eventually dry up, or you could, you know, scoop it up in the shovel and dump it in your garbage can. If you disturb it too much when it's dry, you could actually spread the spores around. But it's very common to that it grows on wood. So if people have mulch or compost piles, they might see it at this time of year, especially since it was rainy earlier in the year and a lot of that wood retains
yes,
the moisture. And
right.
Now all those little fungus spores are coming up, just like our weeds.
Interesting. I'm going to just take a break here again to remind our listeners they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the Board of Regents. For more information, go to KUCI.org. Okay, we'll come back. Tell us a little bit more about some of those unusual questions.
We got one person sent a picture of something that looked like a growth on one of their citrus branches, and it was kind of a brown, funny thing, and we were trying to figure out if it was a canker or, you know, what it was. It didn't look like a bug or anything, but one of the other people, when we get stumped on the hotline, we could put a message out to the other people who are volunteer for help. Sometimes, you know, it's a team effort.
Yeah, it is.
I have no idea what this thing is, you know, help. And someone recognized it. It was a caterpillar of a giant swallowtail butterfly. And
oh
they do
goodness.
Like citrus. And I've never seen one in my orange tree, but I've seen the butterflies, so I assume maybe I just overlooked the caterpillars. And now we've gotten that same question several times because it's such a weird-looking creature. It's not like everyone recognizes little monarch caterpillars and has the little stripes, and they get all excited when they see it. But the swallowtail caterpillar doesn't even look like a caterpillar. It looks like a stick of wood, and it looks like something you'd want to knock off your plant.
Hmm.
So we say, no, if you like the giant swallowtail butterflies, it's a caterpillar. And we have gotten, now that we know, when we get it in, it's like, oh, easy answer. But the first time, nobody knew what it was.
One lady,
I think it was Mary Steele, recognized it.
I'll be darned.
And that's how we find sources of information, too, because now we found that there's website that has like Orange County Wildlife, and we can look at as all the butterflies and creatures and everything that are particular to Orange County. We've found some good caterpillar identification websites, and so we share that with other people on the hotline, and then we could, once we find the source that is a reliable source of information, when a person asks a question, we always give them another link to follow up on. So we'll go, summarize the research we found, and then we'll give them the link to where we got the research if they want to read more than what we told them.
And Linda, could you repeat to our listeners our hotline website as well as our website?
Okay, our hotline website. Now, this is going to sound
Write this down now, folks.
It's going to sound like a lot of letters, but they all have a meaning to them. So the MG is Master Gardeners. Of course, Orange is for Orange County. UCANR means University of California Agricultural and Natural Resources. And the EDU is a website that indicates it comes from an educational organization. So here goes. Hotline at mgorange.ucanr.edu. Now, if you want to look at our website, it's mgorange.ucanr.edu, and you'll find a lot of information. You'll find, besides how you can contact the hotline with questions, there'll be a calendar of events you can go to, or we have speakers out all over Orange County. We have different. We will be at the Spring Garden Show at South Coast Plaza in a couple weeks. We'll be at the Green Scene at Fullerton. We'll be down in Riata Park.
These are sites we go to every year that you can always look for the Master Gardeners. Do you give tips on growing? For example, recently I was at a meeting and a fellow said his wife wanted him to buy some pots to grow some vegetables in pots, and those kind of tips are very important because a lot of people have initial success in growing in pots, and then about 6 months, a year later, issues come up.
Well, we give information on all kind of gardening. You don't have to have an acre of land to be a gardener. And we have people, even on our hotline, people who are in our speakers bureau who live in a townhouse and maybe just grow a few things in containers, as Mark mentioned. So when people have plants in containers, we would say number one thing is have a hole in the container. If you don't have a hole in the container, you're dooming your plant to root rot. You can grow. I grew carrots in a container this year because I was tired of the bugs eating off the tops of the carrots as soon as they sprouted. So I put them in a container and put some netting over the top. And once they sprouted, I took the netting off, and they were just fine.
Sure, and herbs and things like that are many of them are invasive and will take over a garden.
But in a container, you have to have
works well.
Use the same soil all the way through. No gravel in the bottom. I know your grandma probably taught you to put gravel in the bottom. You can put a piece of screen over the hole so you don't lose all your dirt out there. Some people use a coffee filter. I've tried landscape fabric, and I found that didn't drain well enough. So screen works really well because the water flows right through. Use the same potting mix throughout. And be sure you've got potting soil and you're not just putting dirt in there. Your garden dirt's not going to work in a pot. It gets compacted. Soil has to have air in it. So buy something specifically for pots. And there are different blends you could find. Some of them will have more pumice or something to keep the whole air holes in the soil. And then don't forget the fertilizer.
Gotcha. And oftentimes it becomes a matter of just looking at what is on the bag that you buy to see what's in it and why. Mm-hmm. And you can always ask somebody at a nursery or even a big box store. Oftentimes they have specialists at the big box stores that know something about gardening.
Yes, in fact, a few of our master gardeners are nurserymen at some of the big box stores. So
gotcha.
You might accidentally run across one of them, and they'll be able to help you out.
And then I always go there and get that good information.
Because when I'm shopping, I give people information. I remember it was like February, and I said, they had the just because they're selling it doesn't mean it's the right time of year to plant it. And some guy was looking at peppers, and I said, you know, that is not really a good time of year now to grow peppers. And he said, oh, I wondered why my peppers weren't doing well. They like hotter weather, you know, wait a few months to get the pepper then, because it's just too cold right now. The pepper's not going to grow. And then he thanked me for helping him, and I was... So another man, I wish I had my cards with me. I could have given him the hotline card. And he got into a whole long conversation about succulent plants and drought, and we just went on and on.
It seems like especially when we go to the nurseries, it's amazing how people are interested in gardening. And oftentimes it's just the simple things, like bad results, weeds, etc., that are hard work. And oftentimes, master gardeners on our website can give good information how to make your garden more productive without being difficult, hard work, and keeping those weeds in check.
Oh, yeah, especially with the rain we've had this year. After going through so many years of drought, one thing that makes a weed is that they're very persistent. So those seeds could stay in the soil for many, many years, and when they get wet, boy, did they sprout up. I'm sure a lot of people are experiencing that this year, just an inundation of weeds all over the place. Every variety and type of weed.
And it's amazing how we get tired of weeding. Mm-hmm. Probably and some people love to weed. I don't get, don't take that, I don't understand it myself, because I can remember as a kid that I always had to weed our garden, and I didn't want to garden for years after that, but finally I got convinced.
Well, we can give you a few tips. Once you've got things under control, use a lot of mulch. A thick layer of mulch really can help suppress weed growth, because the sun doesn't get onto those weed seeds, and some of them won't sprout well underneath a good layer of mulch. So, 3-4 inches of mulch around your plants. Don't get the mulch close up to the trunk of the trees.
That's one of the key things.
It's a very key thing for weed control.
Why is that?
It's just keeping the sunlight off the weed seeds and kind of smothering them. Some weeds are very persistent and will pop through the mulch, but there's a lot that won't, even though the seed might sit there, the seed won't sprout if it's covered with a layer of mulch.
And why not right up against the plant?
That can cause root rot, because another role of the mulch is to help the moisture stay in the soil. You'll have less evaporation than you would just from bare dirt. So we put that mulch in like a little blanket, keeping the moisture in the soil, but we don't want it right around the trunk of the tree, because you don't want the trunk of the tree to be wet all the time.
And even when
we water, we don't want the hose, we don't spray the trunk, because the tree doesn't absorb water through the trunk. The roots are way up, far away from the trunk, and that's where we want the water to be.
Absolutely, and with that, as a result, dampness or wet promotes disease.
Especially fungus.
Fungus
likes moisture.
So just keep it a few inches away, or a foot away if it's a big tree, or
six
longer
inches would be enough.
Yeah, just so they don't go up into the stem of the tree.
Yeah, so it's not leaning right up against the trunk.
Good point, folks, because I see that all the time as I go around, and sure, we all the master gardeners do that, and our neighbors especially are good on that. Is there anything the average home gardener can do to become more knowledgeable?
Sure, you can visit our website and read on what we have. There's some other websites that are pretty good. You can go to, there's California Garden Web. It's another thing. It's run through UCANR as well as Master Gardeners. And you can find links to that. You can go to the state website, too.
Good. That is good. Websites are wonderful. And just Google it if you can't figure it out.
If you want to find out about pests, a good one is our ANR website. If you do IPM, It stands for Integrated Pest Management.
Remember those initials.
Yeah, IPM, ANR, and that'll take you to our pest management website, and you'll see pests of home and landscape, and you'll find all kinds of information there. They even have videos on how to get rid of bed bugs and, you know, things you wouldn't expect.
And fertilizers are another thing. We always want to use fertilizers, but using the correct fertilizer are important also.
That's true. You have to and following the package directions. That's one of the things that people mess up the most, is not following the directions. More is not always better.
I get you. And that's, and it's just like spacing of a garden.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to cram as many things in as possible, and that isn't always so bad to keep the weeds out, because they are the ones that take over the good things.
But we always tell people, if you want an 8-foot tall tree, don't buy a tree that has a mature height of 25 feet, because
right.
you'll have a lifetime of pruning every couple of months.
You got it. I understand that. That's one of the big mistakes I made years ago.
Well, I think we all have.
Yeah, everybody has. But pruning is a very important process, too, and there are good tips on our website on pruning.
Yeah, and we're in the process of, people are putting together some short videos. In fact, University of California Master Gardeners does have, I believe, a YouTube channel. People can go there. I know we have, on our website, we have videos about composting, and we're adding more, and there are plans in the works now to make, for us to actually do some filming here at the research center.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a group. Greg Stevenson has a group together, and they're doing a lot of videotaping. We want to bring our organization into the 21st century.
Boy, and that sometimes that's difficult,
yeah,
isn't it?
We want to get on YouTube too.
Well, those are some real good tips. Any other questions that are kind of unusual that have come up?
I would
recently?
Like to just give some people advice. Or, you know, we do get photographs in quite often for plant identification. If someone sees a plant they like and they want to know the name of it so they can buy one. We can't really tell what the plant is if it's not in focus, or if it's from maybe 50 feet away, it's just like a little green blob. So if you want us to identify a plant, it's good to have a picture of the whole plant, and then get some close-ups of the leaves, the stems, and the flowers, because especially flowers are really important for plants that are very similar. Sometimes you could tell the difference from one plant to another by the structure of the flower. And we could see how the leaves are arranged on the stem. That's another key for plant identification, whether they're alternate, they're opposite each other, they're staggered, they're whorled, whatever, the shape of the leaf. So just, you know, good, clear pictures. More is better in that case, of different parts of the plant, and that will really help us help you.
Did you say, did I hear you correct, that you can phone? Well, I don't believe we use a phone anymore, but previously we used to get information.
Yeah, we get majority of our things come in through our website and through the hotline.
Through the hotline.
And our phone number is on our website. If you have an old card with our old phone number, that's a 714.
It's no longer in existence.
We have a 949 area code, because we've moved from Costa Mesa to Irvine.
Right, to the research center.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps a great deal, because many times people have been using the Master Gardener program for information, mm-hmm. et cetera, and if they have an old card, and we've given out thousands of them over the years, that old phone number is no longer good. But if you can't remember the website, be sure to Google it. And if you get on the website, you can get the hotline.
Yep, that's
link
true.
Right there. You can also listen to our radio shows on a podcast format. Just go to radio show on there and pick the program you want to listen to, and you'll get some good advice. Takes about 45 minutes of your time, but you'll get some good advice from experts like Linda and Karen and all the other master gardeners that have been on our program. So we are just about done for today. Linda, thank you so much for coming on today, listening to our program. Program from time to time. You mentioned you listen to it.
Yeah, I do. I like it because on the Thursday morning when it's broadcast live, I'm not always around where radio is, but it's great to be able to go onto the website and to look at that whole list of topics and be able to click on different topics. A lot of these people are my friends too, and they have a wealth of information to share. So it's, you know, the great thing about the podcast is you can listen to it any time of day.
That's true. And certain issues come up at different times of the year. And you can always find first program of the month is what's going on this month in our gardens. So check that out. And you'll be surprised what you can find out. And all you need to do is get one good thing from it.
That's true. And that one good thing can make a big difference.
Absolutely. In our garden, very important thing, especially with climate changes that are going on. We find different issues come up at different times, but for the most part, if they've come up, our hotlines people like Linda and the rest of the crew know where to get the answers to help you. Thank you very much, and talk to you next week.